846. So diplomats from nearly 200 countries have been meeting in Poland. They've been aiming to hammer out a set of rules for the Paris Climate Agreement that will help push countries to cut fossil fuel emissions. Under the Paris deal signed in 2015, virtually every country on Earth agreed to submit a plan for curbing emissions and vowed to ratchet up efforts over time. Since then, we've seen the ascendancy of Trump in the US. We've seen a Brexit vote throw certainly Europe's situation into a certain level of uncertainty. But let's ask Zheng Huang, independent legal researcher with LawQuant LLC, first of all. Good morning.
Morning, Alex.
Why is this conference so important?
So this is an important follow-up to the Paris Accord we mentioned from 2015. Basically, the job for this conference was to negotiate a rule book for the Paris Accord. So the kind of the document that they need to come up with will be a fairly thick document that answers, you know, questions such as exactly how do countries have to report on actions they're taking, what information do they have to provide on the commitments they made under the agreement, and how will the finance flows work, what kind of mechanisms are there to increase the commitments already made. These are the things that were not clearly hammered out in the Paris Accord. And basically, we have, you know, these bureaucrats and diplomats negotiating, and the conference is due to end tomorrow on Friday in Poland. And they'll need to come up with sort of a roadmap to exactly implement the Paris Accord.
Has there been some good news?
Well, the news about there's some use of, you know, progress. You know, some countries have committed to, you know, increase their commitments under the Paris Accord, but, you know, unfortunately, there are more troubling news than the encouraging news. First of all, earlier this week, we saw the United States, Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Kuwait, kind of an interesting foursome there, that actually, you know, vetoed the efforts of the conference to recognize the IPCC report that came out earlier. The fight was to whether the language would be adopted at the conference to welcome the report, as opposed to, you know, noting the report, that these four countries basically said, well, we don't really want to welcome the report. We sort of, you know, want to push back on the conclusion, kind of the dire conclusion of the report. And basically, you know, this is kind of full-on climate change denialism in action in the world stage, basically.
Why is the U.S. playing a role when it apparently withdrew from the Paris Accord under the Trump administration? What's going on there?
Yeah, President Trump has famously withdrew from the Paris Accord, or, you know, announced his intention to withdraw from the Paris Accord. But under the rule of the rules of the accord, actually, the U.S. can't formally withdraw until November 2020. Kind of interesting, you know, timing, in the sense that that's exactly when the next presidential election in the U.S. will take place. So, President Trump has announced his intention, yet the U.S. is still in it. So there's kind of a weird dichotomy of the U.S. role in the conference going on. On one hand, the United States actually, you know, held a session that was focused on promoting fossil fuels and nuclear energy, which is kind of weird considering the character of the session. And, you know, actually the session was interrupted by a number of protesters. On the other hand, there are a number of Korea U.S. government officials who are actually at the conference, who have been, you know, at the forefront of the climate change. The diplomacy was, you know, part of the 2015 Paris Accord, that are, you know, deeply engaged, albeit in the background, in hashing out the details that I discussed earlier. So, you know, on one hand, U.S. is sort of, you know, saying different things about, you know, pushing climate change, the denialism coming directly from the administration. But on the other hand, they have career diplomats who actually want to push the accord along. So it's kind of a mixture of a role the U.S. is playing at the conference.
Sounds like a fair bit of confusion there. What can we expect by the end of this conference?
So basically, you know, you want to have a rule book, but on more than the rule book, basically what we want is sort of, you know, pushing the agenda forward. What, you know, a lot of people back in 2015 were hoping that is by, you know, this time when this conference will be held, you know, countries will be actually, you know, putting out more concrete proposals to actually accelerate their commitments made in the 2015. basically, that's really not going anywhere. I mean, if the countries can come up with some kind of, you know, workable rule book that the different countries can agree on, I think that would be a success by itself. The Paris Accord by itself is not a legally binding mechanism. It's basically a process, trust process, where, you know, things were supposed to work by peer pressure. So the two important issues that will sort of need to be hammered out are, one, you know, basically the reporting and the transparency issues on, you know, in different countries' commitments. And the other is finance. Green Climate Fund, which was really heralded in South Korea, is all but dead. So there will need to be some kind of other financial arrangements made. That seems to be a much harder task at hand.
With some investments still going on in coal, in fact, quite a lot of investments still going into coal, it's quite interesting that this meeting has assembled in Poland, in the heart of coal country there, Katowice.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And you would think that would hammer home the message in itself. Is there a sense of fatalism or helplessness that we're all so divided that the people in very powerful positions are not sufficiently united? I mean, you'd think at least they could get their heads together and find a way forward.
Well, on a very global level, I think there's kind of a lack of leadership going on. Back in 2015, the biggest breakthrough was that both United States and China kind of took the leadership role. You know, the then President Obama and, you know the Chinese President Xi Jinping met and hammered out some details. And, you know, United States and China happened to be two leading emitters of these greenhouse gases. From the U.S. perspective, you know, there's the Trump presidency, which threw, you know, monkey wrench into the process. On the other hand, on Chinese side, you know, China is desperate to keep up its economic growth. And as I said earlier, the Green Climate Fund idea, which has been heralded a few years ago, is basically dead. Under the ambitious proposal, original proposal, there was supposed to be over about $100 billion a year given from the developing countries to developed countries to deal with, you know, this climate change technologies and so forth. But, you know, and China kind of got on board looking for that incentive. But with that financial incentive now out of the picture, China actually has been very, very silent in this conference. They haven't been really pushing to oppose the conference. On the other hand, they haven't been really taking the leadership role. So with the number one and two producers of the gases sort of, you know, really basically relinquishing their leadership role, yeah, I mean, right now the global diplomacy on this front is sort of, you know, rudderless, leaderless, and, you know, it's basically what we have now.
Scary, isn't it? And China clearly carries some of the blame there. It's also very popular these days to put a lot of blame in President Trump's direction. Does he, do you think, realistically carry not only blame for his own country's actions, but also for creating a certain atmosphere with China that hasn't exactly incentivized Beijing to jump on board with the world community?
Sure. I mean, China is probably a lot more concerned about its, you know, trade war with the United States, as well as keeping up its, you know, economic development. So, you know, the climate change is probably not in the immediate, list of things to do in President Xi Jinping. I think, you know, from the U.S. perspective, it goes a little more than President Trump's personal conviction that climate change is a hoax. It's actually, that line is sort of embraced by the entire Republican Party. I mean, which is kind of stunning, because 10 years, if you go back 10 years ago, you see, all, you know, Republican presidential candidates talking about climate change as a grave problem. But somehow the political change has, you know, shifted where, you know, there's a very substantial, maybe not majority, but substantial minority of Americans who don't believe in climate change. So we do need to fight the climate change denialism at some level.
Well, there are still a lot of people making videos about the Earth being flat, and, you know, a substantial number of them are, you know, you think this is either a very good straight-faced spoof, or this person actually believes what they're saying.
I mean, you know, throughout it's history, there have been all kinds of conspiracy theories.
There have been, but at this time, there's far less of an excuse for it.
that. And problem is that, you know, it's really a problem when a group of people with really strange conspiracy theory actually gain significant political power, which is sort of what we have right now.
Yeah, I'm not saying President Trump believes in a flat earth, but the point is if...
Well, he does believe, he did say that climate change is a Chinese hoax.
You know, yeah, which is perhaps almost as bad as saying that. Thank you very much, Zheng Huang.
Thank you very much.
Try not to sort of turn this into a platform for unheralded or unwarranted Trump bashing, because I don't think that's productive. But criticism, just as credit, needs to be placed where it's due. That's our show for today. We'll be back tomorrow, 7:05. We've got your latest news headlines next, followed by Inside Korea.